This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. Our emphasis is on innovative thinking and practices that have solid data and results. When Social Security started, retirement age was 65 and life expectancy was 62. And do the math. If you were lucky enough to beat the odds, you could eke out a few years of leisure before dying. Things have certainly changed. If you retire at 65, what are you going to do with decades that you're likely to live? Would you have enough income? What are employers going to do when millions of boomers retire and create a brain drain and worker shortage? What can you do to better plan your career or retirement? Career management consultant Brad Taft will help us develop new career strategies for today's world. He is author of Boomer Bust, New Career Strategies in a New America. In the first part of the show, we'll focus on how the job market is changing. And in the second part of the show, we'll focus on practical things you can do to navigate the job market rapids. Brad, welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Pleasure to be here.
So, Brad, what's good about today's careers and job markets?
The changing workplace is providing a variety of opportunities for individuals who especially want to have flexibility in their work. In other words, companies are needing more people on a part-time basis, project basis, and interim basis. In other words, temporary assignments for people. And for a certain segment of the mature workers, this certainly fits their needs with regards to having that flexibility versus a full-time job in a structured environment.
That's great. So you don't have to choose between 40 hours knocking yourself out or not working at all.
Definitely. And while certainly individuals want to continue to work full-time and need that income, there are those opportunities that certainly still exist, but at the same time, companies are realizing they need to be much more flexible in their approach, even to full-time work, to allow individuals to have different hours when they need it and so on, and still meet the productivity needs of the organization.
So one of the ways employers are being more flexible is with full-time or part-time. What other kinds of new flexibility are you seeing from employers?
Opportunities to share jobs. As an example, you have two individuals who are approaching retirement age. They've worked basically side by side doing the same type of work. They both have an interest in cutting back but continuing to work on a part-time basis. So to offer the opportunity for them to share a job, each say work 20 hours a week, mm-hmm. So you have the equivalent of one full-time position. Therefore, you can keep two very experienced workers on board, not have to go out and train two new ones to fulfill the needs of the workplace.
Are most employers starting to realize the need to become more flexible, or is this just starting to change?
Just starting to change. Two recent surveys, one by Manpower International, the large temporary employment service company, and also SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management, did a separate study. They found that the majority of companies, probably 68 to 75%, still do not feel that the aging workforce, the pending brain drain, or what I like to call talent drain, is really affecting them yet, and they have not made plans for that. In fact, the SHRM survey showed that only 28% of employers that they surveyed have actually set in place flexibility plans and other measures to encourage recruitment and retention of older workers.
What are some examples of some employers that are ahead of the curve and setting the pace?
I think two come to mind. Number one is Borders Bookstores. They surveyed their customers and found that the average age was 45. Therefore, they saw an opportunity to offer associate positions, store associate positions, to mature workers and provide them with the opportunity for medical benefits starting at 20 hours per week. So a person really could work half-time and certainly in a retail environment have the flexibility in terms of hours to work when they want to and still be eligible for benefits. So that's an excellent one from the retail standpoint. The other is CVS Pharmacy. Starting with the CEO on down, the company realized a number of years ago that with the demographics of the aging baby boomers needing more pharmaceuticals as time went on, would call for a large demand for pharmacists. And with the rate of pharmacists retiring and not enough coming out of pharmacy school to fit the bill, they instituted a program they call it the Snowbird Program. And they give pharmacists who work in the northern states the opportunity to transfer down to their stores in the Sun Belt, because obviously with the migration each winter of corresponding customers, creating more demand in their Sun Belt stores. And also they have a program to entice retiring pharmacists who want to work, say, part-time or on a temporary basis, the opportunity to do so. It's worked out very well for them. They're very pleased with the opportunity to keep qualified pharmacists busy in the stores where they're needed.
That's really impressive. You mentioned pharmacy is one of the shortage occupations. What other occupations is there going to be a real shortage with?
Well, continuing with healthcare, certainly it's well stated that allied healthcare positions, nurses and so on, continue to be in short supply. So healthcare organizations, hospitals, and other healthcare delivery organizations are really becoming very creative in terms of providing flexible work environments to recruit and retain qualified nurses. So again, from a standpoint of flexible hours, the opportunity to work part-time or on-call and the like really is crucial. Technical employees in all industries, certainly there are a lot of outsourcing continuing to go on to foreign countries in some fields, but you definitely need technicians on site. You need to have a contingent in terms of engineers and the like here, and there just aren't enough of them. Companies really realize that they need to pull out all the stops to recruit and, again, retain critical workers, meaning they perform critical assignments for their company.
I know in nursing there's such a shortage that a lot of hospitals have programs where they'll pay your tuition if you agree to work for them so many years. Are there programs like that for older workers?
Definitely. A lot of training and development is taking place and being emphasized. And companies see that as a major retention tool. It's an opportunity to provide ongoing development for their employees, and certainly that develops a much stronger relationship between the employee and the company when the company offers them training to not only keep up with the state of the art in their particular field, but also to advance their career with regards to getting a certification or a degree. So more and more organizations, not just healthcare, are seeing the need for that and are developing programs that, especially with online learning and the like, that really do fit the needs of individuals. And as an example, with mature workers, they can be taught very well. And of course, the fastest growing segment of internet users are individuals 55 plus. Mm-hmm. So that takes care of the myth that you can't teach mature workers about technology, and they can take part in online learning, which again is very flexible with regards to going online whenever you want to during the day to take a tutorial and take a course.
So the starting point would be checking with your own employer if you're still working and if you like the field. For people who are burned out on what they're currently doing, is there a way to find out about training opportunities with other companies?
More and more companies are definitely touting the training and development opportunities that they provide, simply because they see that as a part of their employment brand, if you will. They see this as a recruiting and a retention tool. So in going to their website and talking with company representatives, whether it be at job fairs or when contacting the company directly, they are more than willing to talk about the opportunities for training and development that they provide.
Are there ways that, say, a 60-year-old worker can present themselves as having a lot more skills than, say, a 20-year-old and do it with tact?
Yes, I think one thing that I tout in my book, Boom or Bust, New Career Strategies in a New America, as well as in my practice of working with individuals of all ages, but certainly mature workers, in helping them with their career transition, is to really think about what are the skills, the knowledge, the experience that you have that fits the bill, that really hits the nail on the head in terms of what a prospective employer is looking for. So I urge people to get out there, understand the job marketplace, do their due diligence, look at what companies are looking for, and then in the course of the conversation, whether it be an initial informational interview, kind of testing the waters and certainly in the actual job interview, to have in their mind a list of their accomplishments, their talents and skills that they want to make sure that they communicate.
So it's kind of matchmaking, making sure that you know what they want and you know what you're good at.
Exactly. I call the art of job seeking the great equalizer. Doesn't matter if you're a clerk or a store associate or a CEO, everybody's wearing their salesperson's cap when they're out there looking for a job. And as effective salespeople know, you need to know, number one, your product inside and out. In this case, that's you, the skills, the knowledge, the experience that you're bringing to a potential job opportunity, and what the client needs, what they are looking for, and how your services, how your skills can benefit them if they do buy your services. So it's kind of a crass way to look at it, I guess, but in reality, that's what it's all about. It's matching up an individual's talents and abilities with the needs of the employer as it relates to that specific job. So the individual who does that research, who develops a communication strategy to make sure that those things match up, is really ahead of the game.
You talk about age-proofing careers. What does that mean?
That means that despite or regardless of your age, you as an individual have talents. You have skills, you have a knowledge base, you have experience in doing certain things. And regardless of age, there are definitely critical positions out there that companies need. An example of this is the energy field. Certainly, when you look at the needs of refineries and petroleum pipeline companies, drilling firms, and so on, there is a large contingent of very technical positions, all the way up to senior project engineers. And when they look at the demographics, I was talking with a consultant in Houston several weeks ago who works with a lot of energy-based companies. Their surveys show that, especially in engineering ranks, 70% of critical employees are eligible to retire in the next 5 to 10 years.
Mm.
So that shows that an individual with those talents who does have an interest in continuing to work certainly is in a good position to take advantage of that. So I think in general, really age-proofing your career means regardless of one station in life, as long as you have talents, if you have skills in a position that continues to be in demand, you certainly have an opportunity, both age-proof and recession-proof, to continue to work on a regular basis.
Now, are there myths that we need to be aware of?
Yes. In fact, my co-author, Carlene McKay, and I just developed a set of flashcards on, we call it Overcoming Myths About Employing Older Workers. And we've identified 39 myths that are pervasive out in the workplace, especially as it relates to older workers. So on the front of the card is the myth, and you flip the card over and you have the facts to dispute the myth, as well as tips for job seekers.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, I'll give you one that's often touted, and that is that, oh, older workers are too expensive to employ them. Why? Really, they're going to look at the top of the range in terms of their compensation. And, of course, when it comes to health benefits and so on, they're just really way too expensive. Well, a couple things need to be looked at as it relates to that whole topic. Number one, in the past, we looked at seniority as a basis for increasing one's pay. So if you worked at a company, you expected each year to get a raise just based on being there. It wasn't really tied to productivity. However, in the market-driven 21st century, both private as well as public sector businesses realize that it's really the marketplace that determines pay scales. So if you have the skills, talents, and experience necessary to take on a job, then you as an individual need to realize that if there are a lot of other people out there that have those same skills, then supply and demand can unfortunately cause the rate of pay to continue to be fairly low and not increase on a regular basis. So that's one aspect from a standpoint of pay. It's really the marketplace that determines pay ranges, not a person's age.
And one of the things that helped change that was that people don't stay at jobs for 20, 30 years anymore. You're lucky to stay with an employer for 5 or 6 years.
That's very true. The tenure of physicians really has lessened. So, again, the seniority from that standpoint may not be as big of a factor. And again, the marketplace really determines that. The other thing I wanted to mention about the older workers are too expensive factor is that when it comes to healthcare costs, I think employers need to look on an individual basis with regards to a 50-year-old walking in the door and applying for a position. Perhaps that individual's spouse works at another company and that person could be covered by their health insurance so that the individual may not need health benefits, and it's certainly an older individual who uses Medicare, utilize that versus the companies. And two, a healthy 55-year-old will cost the company less in health care costs than a younger person maybe who isn't taking that good care of themselves, maybe obese, a smoker, or whatever, and maybe starting a family and have dependent care and the like. So a lot of factors need to be looked at as it relates to various costs. And I'll point out one study that I think is very interesting on this. It's AARP does a study every couple of years with Towers Perrin, which is a benefits consulting firm. And they have a study called the Business Case for Workers 50 Plus. And if you go to the AARP.org website, you can get that information in their research section on that. Some very interesting statistics.
Employers are very limited in what they can ask the employee, but the employee can volunteer this kind of information. Would that make a difference?
Yeah, from a standpoint of discrimination, you know, age and so on, obviously employers can ask you your age. And I urge my clients who are, when we develop their resume and so on, to leave some clues off of the resume, including when you graduated from college and so on. That may or may not be a point of reference to determine a person's age. The other thing, too, is, again, with thinking about myths and making sure that you as a job seeker can overcome those misconceptions, I think it's important to make some assumptions. Think about, okay, as I'm talking with this prospective employer, they may not be bringing it right out in terms of statements, but it seems by the types of questions they're asking and so on, maybe they're concerned that I can't learn as fast as younger workers, or maybe I'm not as flexible as other people. So what can I, in terms of talking about my career experience, bring out with regards to examples to show that I have been in a changing organization, in fact, instituted some changes and that very well, or that I have taken it upon myself, even though my company didn't provide a training program, I saw the need to take a course at a community college or a technical school to make sure that I stayed up with the state of the art in my particular field. So I think it's taking the initiative and the strategy to think about what myths, what areas might a employer have some concerns about, and how can I communicate my background to them in such a way that it dispels those myths and supports my candidacy for the job.
That underscores, too, the importance of being proactive and making sure that you are keeping up in the field or even ahead of the field.
Very much so. I think it sends a very positive message to talk about trends that are affecting the particular function that you're in. Certainly you can do that in terms of posing questions to the employer about their priorities, what do they see changing out there in the marketplace and the effects of technology, things like that, just to get an understanding of where they're coming from, and then be ready again to bring out examples about your background that shows that you have that same interest in keeping up with changes and trends and so on, and what you're doing to make sure that you're continue to be productive as an employee.
What's another big myth?
I think along the lines of just the feeling that older workers aren't as productive as younger workers. They're burnt out, they don't have as much energy, and really I think the key is that while people need to keep in mind marginally faster is far from the only measure of productivity. A person may do things a little slower, but they may do them much more accurately, as an example. And productivity, frankly, is a character trait. It's not a generational trait. I know individuals, young and old, who frankly aren't a good match in their current position, just don't have the interest, and therefore their productivity suffers. Conversely, I know individuals who are very passionate about their work and definitely wake up each day with a burst of energy to get the job done effectively and quickly. So I think when you look at the research, it shows that it's really, is the job a match to an individual and their interests? Now, let's face it, there are some physically demanding positions out there that younger individuals are naturally much more attuned to doing well, whereas as one gets old, has potentially, I'll say, health issues, but just from the standpoint of strength and mobility and things like that, might not be a match. But I think in general, it's really, is this job a match with an individual from a standpoint of their interests and their passion, and that brings out the energy and the productivity that's needed.
I love that phrase, that productivity is a character trait, not an age trait. Might even be something that you could volunteer in an interview.
Yeah, I think, again, it's just having that awareness and thinking about and anticipating, you know, what are other areas that a person may have a misconception about. I think, again, we talked about it earlier, and that is the whole aspect of flexibility in the workplace. So on the part of companies to have flexible opportunities for people, but also individuals themselves in terms of their ability to change with the job, to be flexible and the like. So I think overcoming the myth that older workers are inflexible, they're set in their ways, they can't change. You look at a couple facts to dispute that. The Boston College has a very strong center on aging and their Families and Work Institute. And they've done several studies that when people have an opportunity to control their workplace, in other words, have flexibility to control the hours, exercise autonomy, and find additional opportunities in which to learn, the more likely that they're going to continue to work with that organization and do so very productively. So I think it just shows that people are going to contribute much more effectively if they feel that they have ownership in the job and really can roll with the punches, can go with the changes that are necessary to continue to be productive.
Mm-hmm. Different generations do have a different outlook on work. Any tips for what the older worker can do when they have a younger supervisor?
Yeah, this is coming up more and more with regards to workplace issues. When you have a relatively young manager and have older subordinates. A lot's been studied, and I think there's a lot more to do on generations in the workplace. This is an interesting time. When you think about it, there really are four generations sharing the workplace. We have the traditionalists, the World War II generation, those born prior to 1946. Obviously, the baby boomers have been well chronicled, born from 1946 to 64. Then we have Generation X, 65 to 83. And then those born past 1983 are the millennials or Generation Y who are just starting to come into the workplace. So when you look at the four generations, you have to realize they have grown up different times, life experiences from the traditionalists surviving the Depression, the baby boomers during a time of wealth and prosperity, Generation X, a lot of cynicism during the 60s and 70s and so on. So that combined with just their different perspectives on loyalty toward organizations, how they view work, is cause for companies to institute communications vehicles that really allow people to talk and learn, understand where each generation is coming from, and therefore hopefully bridge that generation gap that certainly does exist in companies.
Is there anything an older worker can do to kind of send a message to a younger supervisor that, hey, I'm okay with the age difference?
Yes, I think the first thing that we have to do is get away, as a mature worker, get away from the statement of, well, this is how, you know, I've always done it, or this is how we used to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't relevant, really. It's you know, what's happening now in the organization, and certainly the manager, especially if they're younger, may feel very uncomfortable hearing that statement. So I think older employees especially need to, in their communications with younger workers, show respect, certainly offer a suggestion in terms of, hey, after reviewing this process and doing this for a while, what do you think about this? And then giving in the form of a recommendation in terms of a suggestion, not just saying, oh, well, you know, I don't like doing it this way. You know, we used to do it this old way, and it seemed to work a lot better. So I think certainly coming across with respect and offering that collegiality and offer of making suggestions on how things might improve is a much better tack to take.
So the younger worker's biggest concern is typically that the person is going to be rigid and set in their ways.
That's correct. So I think, again, showing the interest and the ability to accept a change and give it a try, and certainly, again, still coming back to the younger manager and saying, hey, I like what we're doing here. I think these aspects of the change are great. However, let me give you my perspective on possibly making some changes, some tweaks in terms of moving it forward. So again, I think it's just thinking about how can I collaborate, how can I work together with my manager and my coworkers, get my point across in an effective way.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Ageless Lifestyles Radio on webtalkradio.net. We're talking with career management consultant Brad Taft, author of Boom or Bust, New Career Strategies in a New America. His website is agelessinamerica.com. That's agelessinamerica.com. It takes you through a step-by-step process for making career decisions and has lots of exercises, tips, and advice. Brad does both speaking and consulting to businesses and coaching with individuals, primarily executives and professionals. If you're interested in anti-aging psychology and haven't signed up for the Defy Aging newsletter, now's the time to do it. Just go to notaging.com. It has my latest thinking, ideas, and tips to help you feel youthful at every age. Brad, when you work with an individual, what kind of a process do you take them through to help them figure out what their career options are?
We've developed a 8-step process that we refer to really as a strategic plan. My feeling is that businesses would not jump in, you know, take money from investors and hit the marketplace without developing a strong business plan. And individuals in managing their career need to keep that same aspect in mind. They really need to develop a strategic plan. So in our book, Boom or Bust, and in my consultation with individuals, we follow this 8-step process. And the first step really is doing what I call a work autobiography, looking at the past. What have you liked about jobs? What haven't you liked? And think about, you know, where am I right now? What are my interests? What are my priorities? Oftentimes we get caught up, especially if we've left a job involuntarily with regards to being laid off or let go. And we bring a lot of baggage with us. And I think in discussions with career coaches and other individuals, it's good just to, you know, lay out your concerns, lay out those frustrations, but realize, okay, you know, what happened, happened. Now I've got an opportunity to go out there and find another job. Hopefully it's going to be an even better match with me and my abilities. So that's really a major first step in what I call letting go of the past.
So it's like in dating, you don't want to talk about your divorce and your ex-wife all the time. You want to talk about now and maybe the future.
Exactly. Yeah. Prospective employers don't want to hear about past jobs and problems you've had, just as our friends and acquaintances don't necessarily want to hear about past relationships. The second step in the process is really an internal analysis, continuing to be thinking about, you know, what's my personal mission statement? I think it's good for people to really think about what's important to me now as it relates to my work. How does that fit in with my lifestyle? So really aspects of work-life balance are very important. And with that in mind, you know, what are the values? What are the principles that I'm bringing to the workplace? Therefore, with a foundation like that, you'd be in a much better position to analyze prospective organizations and positions to really see if there's a match with regards to company culture and the type of work that's available, to see if that's a match with you and your ethics, your values, and your interests.
So you really are a matchmaker. One of the places I see people get into trouble sometimes is you certainly do want to know what you love and try to seek that out, but they'll follow a dictum of do what you love and the money will come. And particularly if you're starting your own business or something, it doesn't necessarily work that way.
No, it doesn't. And I think one thing that differentiates my perspective and my approach in working with individuals who are at a crossroads and moving forward to look at new career options is you've got to keep the marketplace in mind all through the process. So just as you said, it's important for people to think about, okay, if I could wake up Monday morning, go to the job of my choice, what would it be? And what do I love? What brings out the passion in me? And that's an important exercise. I urge people to do that. Think about the ideal position. Take a blank sheet of paper and write out your own position description. What type of organization do you want to work for? How would you characterize your boss, the people, your peers and subordinates if it's a management position, day-to-day activities, special projects, and so on. Then utilize that as a basis for going out and comparing and contrasting the real-life opportunities that exist out there to really see, number one, is it realistic for me to consider this type of job? If not, why? Perhaps I don't have the training, don't have the education to quite fit in that yet. Or it's clear that since it's really a new function or a brand new industry, I really need to look at a stepping stone. Perhaps there's an entry point in a company, and especially that represents a new industry or a new function for me, where I can get my feet wet and really start to develop the skills, knowledge, and experience to move forward to reach that ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. What's our next step then?
The next step really is then to continue the investigation with regards to what careers are hot, what's really in demand. And so again, continuing to look at the marketplace in the context of your interests, what skills and talents you're bringing to it. So thinking about what are the changes, what's influencing the work out there. One example would be certainly the opportunities that are continuing to exist and improve based on the aging of the baby boomer population. When you look at the services that are needed, the products that 78 million baby boomers are demanding as they grow older, this certainly is going to make for more stability and more demand for people who provide those services. So you look at healthcare, beauty products, supplement services, adult communities, things like that. There's just a wealth of potential opportunities that could be a match with your interests. So I think really looking at those trends, getting a feel for what's going to be down the road. And then again, based on that research, developing a plan to reach out to prospective employers and present your background effectively and see what's going to be a match.
What are some of the best internet resources for getting a feel for particular marketplaces?
Certainly, I think having an understanding of search engines from, you know, Google and Ask and so on, and how best to really utilize the internet as a research tool. It's certainly touted as a job searching tool. And to a certain extent, yes. However, the majority of jobs are still found through word of mouth, through networking, through contacts, developing relationships. Now, that's not to say that you can certainly find jobs online by going to the various job portals from the national and international ones like Monster and Hot Jobs to regional job portals that are supported by local media and jobbing.com and other more specialized ones like boomerjobs.com and retirementjobs.com and so on. They certainly can provide opportunities, expose you to positions that might maybe be of interest to you. But I still believe that the internet is best utilized as a research tool. So to put in subjects of interest, positions of interest, industries, and start to read articles, get up to date with what companies are out there based on those parameters is the best way to go. And more companies are really putting a lot of resources into their own websites as it relates to relating their mission, their culture, what's available in terms of training programs, and of course, the actual career section, the job postings that they provide for individuals.
Mm-hmm. And most of them even have annual reports online.
Yeah, most definitely. You can sort through not only the financial information, but also statements by management on issues that are affecting the company and the competitive environment that it's in, what's happening with that industry. So there's just a wealth of information. I think the challenge is sifting through all of it and to deciding what's relevant to you and your strategy for moving forward in your career.
So it's easy to do homework on a company and really sound like you've done your homework in an interview.
Yes, it is. We have the world at our fingertips, especially with the internet. At the same time, I think it's important to reach out to individuals who either work at the company now, may have recently left or had worked there in the past, and get introduced to them and get some insights from them about their experience working at the organization. So again, I think getting back to the whole aspect of networking, it's really important to utilize information based on relationships and introductions that you can make with people who either work there now or have worked there recently to get a better understanding of what it's like to work there, their view of the company culture and where the company's going and so on.
So part of what you do is develop a networking plan that's very strategic for the type of jobs that they want.
Very much so. You know, the next step in our strategic plan really is to develop your career options based upon that research and then reach out to the marketplace to gain information about that and about the specific companies that could potentially provide those. So to develop a networking plan, to find out about organizations where individuals with that within that function, within that industry, take part in. So it could be as general as the Chamber of Commerce and other business networking groups, to specific professional organizations for accounting and finance professionals, sales and marketing professionals, those in various technical ranks. Great opportunities to reach out, meet people that have interests similar to yours and who could be in a position to refer you to potential opportunities.
If you're interested in a particular company, but you don't know anybody there, are there ways of finding out what organizations they're active in and what networking you want to do?
Yes. In terms of, again, going to the company's website, get a feel. They may, in press releases, have quotes by the managers or executives in the company. They may also talk about the fact that presentations were made at the Society of Engineers or the annual conference of, and list out organizations that the company is involved with. So I think you really need to play detective, put on that investigator cap and get out there and really determine what organizations, what groups would be prudent to get involved with to have an opportunity to meet people from that organization.
Mm-hmm. And then what's our next step?
Next step is what we refer to as gap analysis, and that means looking at the challenges and the barriers that are possibly in the way of success in your strategic plan. Companies do this a lot. They constantly are looking at threats and issues to their competitive nature, and we as individuals in the job marketplace should do the same. Challenges to me are more internal. I think it's what's our confidence level? Do we feel comfortable reaching out and being ready for an interview? Barriers are more external. We've talked about some of the myths that exist out there in the marketplace and how to overcome them. So I think the key number one is to reach an understanding with our own concerns, our own shortcomings, do what we can to overcome that, and also to look externally. What are potential barriers out there that could be in the way? And it may be just the fact that we are uncomfortable reaching out to people and asking for advice and networking and so on. Mm-hmm. One thing that I encourage individuals that I talk with is that networking isn't just a one-way street. There are too many people out there that just go out and try to take in terms of calling up people and, hey, can you help me? I need a job, and here's what I'm looking for. Who do you know? It's really approaching that conversation with, I am an experienced professional or manager in this field, looking at new opportunities. Done a lot of research over the last few months or weeks with regards to trends in the field, and love to have an opportunity to chat with you about that, get your perspective on things. So what you're doing is you're reaching out to a person to gain their confidence and their help, but at the same time you're also saying, hey, I'd love to get together and do some information sharing. I'd like to give you my perspective, and I've been in this position having researched the marketplace and so on to read some interesting articles lately. Love to send you some reprints or show you the reprints and get your take on. So you're not just coming across as a person who wants to take information, their help, but you're also willing to give some things as well.
Mm-hmm. And in professional organizations, it's pretty easy to volunteer to be on a committee or take some kind of a leadership role, which quickly gets you seen as a leader.
Very much so. I'm a firm believer in active participation in a finite number of associations, whether it be the Alumni Association, obviously if affiliations with children's school and other activities, and also reaching out from an industry and professional perspective in terms of getting involved in those types of organizations and community-based organizations as well. So being involved on a board or on a committee certainly raises your visibility and gives you an opportunity for much more interaction with individuals who may be in a position to help you.
There are a lot of organizations specifically for women to help other women in business. Any pros and cons on emphasizing that kind of networking?
All very positive. I think it's important to reach out to any affinity group, any constituent group that makes sense for you. So certainly women having an opportunity to get involved in the community and women in business organizations is great. And same way with, again, any other affinity groups that make sense to you, you definitely want to take advantage of that.
Then what's our next step?
Step number 7 is to really hone in on your goals and objectives are and develop what I refer to as your personal brand. You look at companies that are very successful in develop brand, and I define a brand as an image that is memorable. And when you think about it, the most famous brand in the world is Coca-Cola. And just when I say those words, what images come to your mind? Well, it might be the actual script of the words Coca-Cola. It could be the shape of the bottle, the Coke bottle, or it could be the image of Santa Claus around Christmas time holding his bottle of Coke. The point is, Coke has a brand. You automatically think about the pause that refreshes and all the other phrases that are used. We as individuals and certainly other companies need to think about, what impression do I want to present to individuals, to prospective employers, that hopefully is going to be memorable to them? So think about in the context of my background, my skills, my knowledge. And to enhance that, perhaps you're in a position to contribute to an article on a particular topic in your function or your industry, or actually write an article yourself. Reach out. There's a major newsworthy event to get a quote out there on radio or TV, let's say. So there's certainly opportunities above and beyond just in your personal communications with people to gain visibility out there in the marketplace. But I think the key is to develop those goals and objectives, develop a brand, and make sure that you're communicating that effectively out there in the marketplace.
When you're talking about a person having a brand, I'm not sure if you're just talking about the publicity that they generate or if you're talking about the clear, crisp sense of who you are and what you do and what you stand for. To give us an example, what would you say your brand is?
My brand is that I am an experienced career consultant who continues to do a lot of research about the aging workforce and the changing workplace. So I contribute to individuals with regards to assisting them in their career transition and continuing to have success in their career. And at the same time, I also contribute to the community and to businesses by getting on the podium, by writing articles on a variety of issues affecting employers. As an example, a presentation that I give on a regular basis is what I call the new three R's. We always think about reading, writing, and arithmetic from the standpoint of the three R's. Well, with businesses and the changing workplace and the aging workforce, businesses need to be thinking about recruiting, redeveloping, and retaining the workforce of the future, and that certainly includes the aging workforce. So just as we've talked about what companies need to do to enhance their brand and recruit the best and the brightest, continue to develop them, make a commitment to that, and provide flexibility in other aspects to their workplace so that they'll retain those workers. This is a message that I constantly want to get out to everybody.
So a lot of your brand is what you do, and for a lot of people it's going to be pretty similar to their elevator speech.
Exactly. Yeah, having that 30 or 60 second speech where you're asked, well, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, over the years, I've constantly thought about that with my background in career transition and outplacement consulting, working with companies when they have to lay people off and providing career planning, job search training to individuals. The answer to that question really has shifted. I think if you asked that question years ago, let's say back in the 60s and the 70s, the answer to the question would be, oh, I work for IBM or whatever company, and I do this in terms of a function. I'm an accountant, let's say. Then we saw a gradual shift, especially in the 1980s, when mergers and acquisitions started up very heavily, and individuals found themselves out of a job because of merging of two companies and the like. So more and more people were looking for jobs at no fault of their own, and the tenure of people in various positions definitely reduced. It started to be that we naturally became much more identified with our profession, with our function, versus with a company, because that relationship was shortened in nature. So the answer to the question, what do you do, is, oh, I'm an accountant. I work for, and then the company. So we've been shifted more to emphasize and identifying ourselves, describing ourselves by, in a career context, the profession, the day-to-day responsibilities that we have versus the relationship we have with a company.
Well, let me get your take on something. I hear a number of consultants say that if you tell what your job title is, people have negative stereotypes about every job title. You know, if you say, I'm an attorney, or and instead they say, talk about the benefits. For example, instead of saying, I'm an anti-aging psychologist, I might say, I help people think, feel, look, and be more youthful.
Yes. Yeah, much more positive. And again, I think it gets back to just relating to our work from a standpoint of generic, you know, skills, knowledge, and experience, and making a statement, as you say, with regards to the benefits of that. So certainly presenting yourself as a person who is a problem solver in these areas or supports people by, you know, providing these services is much more positive than stereotyping yourself with a specific title. And again, titles don't always, you know, mean the same to people. So to say, oh, I'm a project manager in the housing business. Well, what does that really mean? Versus I work at all levels in terms of developing affordable housing for people.
Mm-hmm.
So that type of example, I think, again, gets back to presenting your brand in a way that people appreciate and will remember.
So we're at the eighth and final step. What's that?
Yeah, the eighth step is what we call developing a marketing toolkit. And again, as I talked about early on, we constantly need to be thinking about the marketplace all through the process. When you're talking about moving on from the past and, you know, what's happened in your previous positions and the like, and what your current interests are, how you want to move forward, all the way through to researching opportunities, seeing what a match is going to be, identifying companies. So marketing comes into play. So I think we really urge people to think about not only the traditional format of developing a resume for yourself, but also perhaps a biography. In some cases, that might be a better way to acquaint a new networking contact and alike with your background, maybe a one or two paragraph biography where you talk about those aspects of your career that you feel are of interest to an individual just in general. Yeah. So there are a lot of aspects to it in terms of a branding statement, a biography, and the like. And certainly, you know, when you're reaching out perhaps to start your own business, whether it be consulting in your particular field of expertise, then, you know, certainly you're looking at developing a brochure and a logo for your company and the like. So a lot of things come into play in terms of how you market yourself, but I think it gets down to written communications as well as verbal communications, making sure that you're comfortable with regards to anticipating what questions are going to be asked of you in the interview, how best to respond to those, and what questions do you want to ask the interviewer, because it's very important to make an interview be an information exchange. And by coming up with questions, you're showing that you have done your research, you're showing that you are interested in the organization and where it's going, and you just want to gain more information to make sure that you're in a position to make a decision as to whether to accept that job if it is offered to you or not.
So there is a lot of homework to do, but if we really think out the process, we're going to end up with much better results, and it'll be well worth the effort.
Definitely. I think, again, it's very important, just as businesses put a lot of time and resources into developing a strategic business plan before they make the investment of developing a new product or a new service, getting into a new market niche, why individuals need to do the same. We need to definitely have a specific plan in mind, make sure that we're doing our due diligence, our research, thinking through various scenarios, and then supporting the objectives that we develop for ourselves.
We've been talking with career management consultant Brad Taft, author of Boom or Bust, New Career Strategies in a New America, which goes into a lot more detail about the eight-step process that he's been describing. His website is agelessinamerica.com. That's agelessinamerica.com. Brad does both speaking and consulting to businesses and coaching with individuals who are making career changes, particularly executives and professionals. Brad, I thank you so much for all your help and guidance. It's been very enlightening.
Thank you, Michael. Really appreciate the opportunity to share some ideas.
Do your coworkers or employees have a youthful, optimistic outlook and good productivity, or do you feel like you're trapped in a Dilbert cartoon? If your company suffers from grumpy old men syndrome, I can help. I can help them and you think, feel, look, and be more youthful. Working in an upbeat, positive, youthful outlook workplace makes a huge difference in how you feel, in productivity, and whether you even want to go to work. The change is remarkably easy and inexpensive. Employers also love it because happier, healthier employees need less sick leave, use fewer health insurance benefits, and are less likely to seek other employment. Don't settle for grumpy old men or grumpy old women at work. Information and videos are at antiagingspeaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com. I like for each program to generate a baby step. I went to a conference once, and the speaker frankly pontificated about empowering our patients. And during the break, a nurse told me that I just don't get it. My patients say, I don't want to do things for myself. I worked hard all my life, and I want you to take care of me. Well, that was a previous generation. Baby boomers and earlier generations have a very different attitude. I look in my dictionary, and retire is defined as withdrawing. I think we need to retire the word retirement. It suggests coasting, resting on your laurels, or just pursuing leisure. That was okay when most people only lived a few years into retirement. But life is a use-it-or-lose-it proposition, and unless we're doing purposeful things and contributing, we're losing it. In the Heldridge study, they asked people currently working when they would like to retire, and they said, 65 or even younger. But when they asked what they wanted to do then, they said, they wanted to work some other kind of job, or work part-time, or go back to school, or start their own business, or do volunteer work. A measly 10% of them said they just wanted to relax and take it easy. Part of that profound shift we're seeing in how people view, quote, retirement. So the baby step I recommend is to retire the word retirement and instead take on new endeavors or reinvent yourself. Whatever specific path you choose, make sure it's something that gives you a sense of purpose and a sense that you're contributing and helping others. As George Hollis, who coached the Chicago Bears when he was in his 80s, said, it's only work if there's someplace else you'd rather be. Or as George Burns put it, retirement at 65 is ridiculous. When I was 65, I still had pimples. This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio on webtalkradio.net. Thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.